Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services. Walker Medical Linen specializes in bed linens, towels, scrubs, and lab coats. Family owned and operated for over 140 years. Find out why hospitals of all sizes, surgery centers, and medical clinics trust Walker Medical Linen. Online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate is giving a tour to the Casey Current GM of the studio, and also talking walking talking tour. So Nate should be back in studio in about 45 minutes. But we have Jesse Newell here from the Kansas City Star, who will now co-host the show. Jesse, good morning. How are you?
Doing great, Stephen. How about yourself?
I'm doing really well. So before we get into football and the Chiefs, we got the NBA draft tonight right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We had our intern, Namdi, who had prepared a wonderful NBA draft preview, and I asked him about Ochai Agbaji and Christian Brown. Ochai certainly will go in the first round. Christian Brown, I've seen plenty of mock drafts having him go towards the end of the first round. What do you think tonight, as Kansas fans will watch the draft to see where these two players end up tonight in the NBA draft?
Yeah, first off, Namdi was doing a great job. I was listening on the way up, and
how about that, Namdi? Praise from Jesse Newell.
I'll agree with him on the Chet Holmgren love. So that was all good, and yeah, I was like, who's this expert talking about the NBA draft? And,
that's right, the guy that's taken my job in 5 years, Jesse.
You know, it's never fun to see those people in your industry, and you're like, this is not good.
No,
this,
I see
this,
it.
This person's doing what I do only better.
Right.
You know, the Ochai thing is kind of interesting because it seems like, I don't know, from covering KU over time, a lot of times the guys that you would expect to kind of move up the boards, they kind of hit a lull and then they fall down a little bit for whatever reason. And Ochai's kind of been the opposite. It feels like he just kind of keeps ascending on these boards and seems like a likely lottery pick. You know, we know him from around here, and obviously I covered him at Kansas, and people know him from Oak Park, and Sam McDowell covered him from a long time ago because he was a high school athlete. But there's just so much to like about him. You know what I mean? Like, when it comes to a personality standpoint, a hardworking standpoint, he can fit into an NBA team right away. I think the question with him, obviously, is just the ceiling with that. He's a really good shooter. He's an older player. He has athleticism but hasn't always shown it in games or used it to the best of his advantage. But he's probably a plug-and-play. You know what I mean? He's probably a guy that right away you can put on your roster and stick in there, and you're going to love what he does for you off the court, in the locker room, in the community, all those sorts of things. And you're going to love if he's the fourth or fifth best player on your team, and he can step in right away and do that. As far as Christian Brown goes, a little bit more of a question mark with him, just because, again, I think because he is younger, the question is more of how good can he get? How good can he be? And he really emerged late in the season for Kansas. You know, the national championship game, the biggest example. He was the biggest part of the comeback before David McCormick hit those big shots late. But, you know, I think you saw better defense from him late. You know, there's some metrics out there that really, really like his defense. He gives you rebounding. He's scrappy. He obviously cusses at every opportunity.
Right.
So,
That's what I look for in a player.
So that gives you a little bit extra as well. But, you know, the measurables, he's tall. The question mark for him is how well is he going to shoot it? And he's had bouts where he shot it really well. You know, Bill Self has commented over time that he kind of brought him to Kansas as a spot-up shooter and wanted him to always shoot more because he thought he could really do that well, and that would be his calling card. And it has and it hasn't. He's gone up and down with confidence. But he also sort of has a slow release from his forehead, so he's got to quicken up the release a little bit. But, you know, there are guys in the NBA that can make that work, and I think some people out there are even as high on Christian Brown's shooting ability as Ochai. So we'll see what happens with these guys, but it'll be a big night, obviously. And for the Jaguars to get two guys going into the year, I don't think anybody would have thought they would have had two first-rounders. So for those guys to emerge as they did, I think it's a credit to them.
A couple things interesting, because we have Jarrett Sutton on the show every week, and Jarrett, Oak Park grad. But he's a regional scout for the New Orleans Pelicans. And one thing he said about Christian Brown was, you know, at the scouting combine, he was his athleticism was through the roof, and they, some people called him the second best athlete that was there. And so there is some upside there that you could see a team falling in love, you know, with him and the possibilities. The other thing, and I tease Jared about this all the time, because look, he loves Ochai, because even though Jared went to Mizzou, Jared went to Oak Park first, and you know, how often does a guy come through your high school that's going to be a first round pick? But if there's ever a case, in all seriousness, for a scout to, we always hear, you know, bang on the table, get on the table for a guy. I trust me, I know Sutton is in those meetings, pounding the table for Ochai to go number 8 to the New Orleans Pelicans. And look, there ain't nothing wrong with that, because if there's ever a guy that knew a prospect in and out, it's Jared Sutton. Do you think number 8 is, do you think that's too high, or do you think that's reasonable?
So that's sort of the interesting part about these drafts, is because, like, what if New Orleans was 12 or 13, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Then you would think, okay, well, that's a perfect fit. You know, that's going to happen, and they have somebody in the organization that knows him really well. The problem with that is that, you know, they get 8, but they don't have another one in that same vicinity. So you really have to trust your pick in that moment. And, you know, 8 seems a little high for me, for Ochai, just based off of, again, we look at these mock drafts, we kind of gauge the interest and gauge the Sam Vecenis out there and the, you know, draft expresses, and that seems just maybe a touch high for Ochai. But again, if you want him, he's not going to be there when you come back around the next round. So, yeah, again, the question for that is, how much do you value what he does, and how can it fit into your organization? And we've seen this. I mean, I'm not the biggest NBA guy out there, don't watch a ton of games, but, you know, the fit is so important. How many, like, former Jacks have gone to Sacramento and it's just gone to die? How many other guards have gone to Sacramento? Tyrese Haliburton have gone to die. Or Andrew Wiggins goes to Minnesota and kind of languishes for a while and then goes to Golden State and is a great opportunity, a great setup. I mean, we see this in baseball sometimes. Guys, pitchers go to a different organization. You utilize a different pitch. You get a different voice in your ear, and all of a sudden it's working. So much of it is fit, and that might be just a step too far for Ochai, but it'd be great if it happened for him, and obviously New Orleans would be knowing what they got with him, because they have the experience of knowing exactly what he's about.
You mentioned Chet Holmgren. Is there a player that you feel like is the number one guy that you, if you had the number one pick, whatever team, but you feel like this is the best player in the draft? Do you feel strongly about anyone?
Yeah, so I mean, again, caveats out of the way, obviously, that I am not an NBA draft guru pro, but I would say...
Would you like to say that Jabari Smith is overrated? Just one more shot at Auburn,
you know,
if you could. Just like,
and
more,
anybody at Auburn is
right.
No good. I mean,
there we go.
Like,
quote that and put that on the
clip that up
A10
and
Twitter
make
account.
Sure that is going out on the airwaves. No, I mean, like, you guys know my bias would be toward the analytics, and Chet Holmgren was amazing this past year. I mean, I know he had kind of split time with Drew Timmy, but what he can do at his size, and you guys were mentioning Kevin Durant, but Giannis is another one. You know, you kind of have to project those guys out and kind of squint real hard and say, hey, what if that guy has this many more pounds on him? What will they look like? What will they produce like? And, you know, to me, statistically, you know, what Chet did at Gonzaga and what he potentially could do in the NBA because of the skill set he has and the tools he has, you know, it's a matter of all you guys talked about, unconcaving his back and getting a little weight on him and seeing all these things. But if all that happens, I think that's the guy I would be betting on.
Nate, I know you've been busy and you missed the first spot. Any final comments before we move on? Because we talked about Ochai and Christian Brown, a little bit of the NBA draft. We're going to move back to football. Do you have anything to wrap things up?
Yeah, I'm curious what your analytics say about
my analytics.
Your analytics, right. Your thing.
It's his, it's his personal analytics
them.
That he's...
So I think about guys that develop into players that maybe are even better than I thought they were going to be at the NBA level. And one of the names that jumps out to me is Marcus Smart. I think Ja Morant has become even – at first I thought he was just kind of like a physical freak. Like, he was just so bouncy and springy. Those guys have turned themselves into good enough shooters – that all of their, because to me in the NBA, you can't be a great player anymore if you can't shoot from the outside because of the way the game is played. So I look at Jaden Ivey, and it feels like to me he's gonna what's gonna determine how good he becomes is how much better does he get as a shooter. Because it was like in the NCAA tournament when they shut down his ability to light things up in transition, he became kind of neutralized a little bit. Is there a good way to study analytically, a guy that's not necessarily a great shooter in college that how do you know which guys can turn themselves into good shooters and which ones can't?
Yeah, it's the million-dollar question, right? I mean, it's what all these professional organizations are looking at. I mean, whether it's baseball or whether it's basketball, we all know the draft is this inexact thing where you're guessing and you're trying to figure out, hey, what if even I get this person to this person in my organization? Can you know? I was just talking with Steven about, hey, any guard that goes to the Sacramento Kings is not going to work. Because for whatever reason, whatever's in the water there, it's not going to work. But maybe if they go to the Golden State Warriors,
right. it's going to work.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like right now, we always talk about the San Francisco Giants with pitching. Like whatever pitcher you take and goes to the San Francisco Giants, like Brian Bannister, it's golden. It's all good. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, but you know, it is interesting because I do listen to some of these podcasts with some of the draft guys, and you will hear like they go gaga over Jaden Ivey because again, transition, what you see from him, the burst, the athleticism, all that stuff. But you know, they do look at different things when it comes to shooting too. Like, hey, is your free throw shooting good? If your free throw shooting is good, because they've talked about how that is more correlated toward future 3-point shooting than even 3-point shooting is, because it's a bigger sample. And you know, if you can teach somebody a stroke from you know, that distance, then you can be able to do it from a longer one. So yeah, I mean, there's lots of interesting things that go into that. But you're right with Ivy and you know, the projectability and then the fit. But I think sometimes. And I try to kind of wrap my brain around this a lot, is just you want to give players credit. They deserve credit for what they do, and a lot of it goes into them. But so much nowadays is like, what organization do you get to, and what can they do for you? I mean, and how can they develop you? And especially the MLB now. I mean, how much of the game is just taking what you have and taking that and maximizing it? And, you know, I was looking at the Yankees the other day, like Clay Holmes. They got him from the Pirates
Good
in some
God.
Trade. Like, he had a 5.73 career ERA, and
he's unhittable now.
He's unhittable. I mean, it's unbelievable. Like, so whatever is in the Yankees magic formula, but you know, I think we all can kind of get pigeonholed. Well, the Royals haven't had enough draft picks, or they haven't had this workout or that. You know, and I mean, obviously that's part of what makes it, is if you can draft a Bobby Witt and now he's succeeding, that's amazing to have, but. I mean, where the Yankees are lapping the field is they're taking Clay Holmes and making him into something. So, yeah, I mean, so much of this is how much can you figure out if you're at the NBA level? Can you figure out how to teach Jaden Ivey how to shoot? And if you think you can, you think you have the people in place, then you've got yourself a great player and potentially a franchise player. And that's what all these organizations are trying to figure out.
Yeah, you start to get these stereotypes now in baseball, like if a pitcher goes to the Giants, like especially like if you're a roto geek like me, boy, you better jump on him.
Yeah.
Or if a pitcher goes to Tampa, another now correlation you're finding, if there was a guy that was drafted by Pittsburgh or he was with Pittsburgh, they can evaluate talent, but they just don't. And then if he goes someplace else and jump on him, they do a nice job of like, it looks like they're picking the right guys. But then you get the Royals, like you don't know if when it comes to starting pitching, are they picking the right guys, are they not developing him? But we're going to go off on a tangent that I don't want to go through again. So thank you, Jesse, for bringing that up at Clay Holmes. But stop it. Yeah. Don't do it. We got a good guest in here. Don't ruin it. Okay.
Because it seems like the Royals pitchers do the opposite. Like it seems like they come to Kansas City and they almost get worse.
Well, whatever.
Or
shut up, Demi.
See. If you have a comment on that, please.
What do the analytics say there?
I like how he keeps saying this, like you have this book
your
analytics.
Book over he does.
Well,
he has a
like
book
this.
Right there. You
Let
see
me
it?
See. But it's your, you know, it's like Jesse's analytics that he's concocted.
This book will be available someday that I've been concocting, you know, yeah, like 800 pages of Jesse analytics that he's concocted over time.
Jesse's
you know?
Analytics. They're his analytics.
So, okay. So here's an interesting topic now that I would like to ask you about. Because Rob Gronkowski is retired, we don't know, because I feel like we'll say, okay, his career is over, and then Tom Brady will call him in the middle of the season, and then he'll come out of retirement again. But when it is all said and done, and you retweeted a really interesting fact that I think most people don't grasp, that Gronk and Kelsey were born in the same year. And
isn't that nuts?
Yeah, it just
isn't
it
that nuts?
It kind of rattles your head a little bit, but when it's all said and done, and I know that championships mean so much in football, and you know, guys will look at it without delving into the stats, and we'll say, well, Gronk was better, because who knows? Maybe Kelsey ends up with more titles. I don't know. When it's all said and done, who do you think will have the best body of work as a pass receiver, Gronk or Kelsey?
It's a good question. And what's tough about this is, again, and I mentioned this in the tweet, is like the career arcs of these guys. Like Gronk to start was like unbelievable. You know what I mean? Like what's Gronk has been lately is kind of a shell of his former self. It's just like,
but still good.
It's still good, but like big. Like we're gonna put this big dude on the field and he's gonna catch contested balls. You know what I mean? But he used to be, you know, do it all. Well, that's where Kelce is. Like the longevity here is crazy. I mean. For him to be, what, 5 months younger than Gronk? And none of us are sitting here talking about, well, Kelce's going to take a big step back or Kelce's not going to be the number one receiver. I mean, you're talking about he's the same age basically as Gronk, and Gronk has retired twice now. And the first retirement was like 2 or 3 years ago. So probably Kelce has some work to do to catch up. But again, you know, you can't count him out because right now with what he does and the technical ability he shows, the way that he reads routes, the way that he's able to get himself open, the way that he has a connection with Patrick Mahomes, and those two work together. Again, at some point, we're all going to have a real discussion about Travis Kelce's getting older. Travis Kelce might not be able to produce all these seasons again, but I don't think we're at that stage yet, right? I mean, I don't think we're close to that stage yet.
And so if people are interested, when you're talking about regular season, I know Gronk's done so much in the postseason, but damn it, still is Kelce.
Yeah.
But so, like Kelce already has him in catches, 704 to 621 in yards. Gronk has 9,286, and Kelce has 9,006. So he's going to hammer him in those two. But then touchdowns, Gronk has 92. And Kelce has 57. And I look back, man, you almost forget Gronk's second year, 90 catches, 1,327 yards, 17 touchdowns.
That's what I'm talking about.
Like five different years. He had a 10-touchdown season. His first 3 years, 10, 17, 11, then 4, but then 12 and 11. His touchdown numbers are insane. And so, I like, when you look at that, like, what touchdowns, catches, yards, when we're going to look to evaluate this, because if you're going to defend Gronk, people go, well, look how many touchdowns he scored. But then if you're going to defend Kelce, look at the longevity and the consistency, and he has way more catches, he's going to have way more yards. What are the most important aspects of an argument as far as who is the better pass catcher?
Where you live, right? we're all, and I do want to say this, again, I probably get kicked out of this, you know,
no.
studio if
You're
I keep defending Rob Gronkowski a bunch.
Not like Gronk.
But yeah, no, I think the thing we also have to remember when you're talking about his second season, we're talking 2011, and it really hadn't swung all the way to like pass happy league yet. You know what I mean? So you kind of adjust those numbers too, where it's like he was doing something at that time where it's like, holy cow, like they're doing stuff through the air that was pretty crazy. But yeah, I mean, obviously, championships is going to be a tiebreaker for some people. Obviously, touchdowns are going to be a tiebreaker. If you live in these parts, you're going to say, well, Kelce's done it for longer and over a longer period. And, oh, by the way, you know, by the time that Gronk retired twice, he was still considered the best player at his own position at Gronk's same age. So, yeah, you can argue either way on that. But like I said, if Kelce has a few more productive years here, which we probably would expect, and then I would say he's closing the gap. But at this point, I'd say he's still closing the gap.
Seemed like the style of player. Who was that goofball commentator from New England that was trashing Kelce for not being physical enough as a tight end? Remember that?
Quarterback.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Everybody knows he's not whatever. Well, Gronk's body took a lot more of a beating, didn't it, through the course of his career than Kelce's, which might be why Kelce has a few more years left in him. And I wonder if that might end up in the long run playing in Kelce's favor in terms of how he's evaluated.
Remember, Kelce missed his rookie year too.
With that knee injury.
He missed a whole year.
But he just doesn't seem to take the same type of hits. Even though Gronk was so much bigger than the guys hitting him, those hits still take a toll over time. And it seems like Kelce's better at kind of avoiding that. Those types of hits.
Yeah, and he's also evolved over time. You know what I mean? With Kelce, where, again, the way he's succeeding now is a little bit different than, you know, you're a little bit older. You got to – it's like – and I keep bringing the baseball, you know, analogies up here. But, like, you know, you get older as a pitcher, you kind of get a little more crafty. You get a little bit more, okay, I got to use the off speed at this time or go more away from my fastball sort of thing. But that's really where Kelce is. I mean, he's kind of a tactician, you know? Like, again, he's finding the openings in zones. He's reading the defense well. He's got a connection with Mahomes. He's understanding these route combinations and where he needs to be. So, I think that's a credit to him. Again, we can compare and contrast kind of what those guys did early in their careers, and it was very different. But the fact that Kelce's still going and still very much considered the number one threat for the Chiefs and should be for, you know, at least the next couple of years, you would think. That's all a credit to him and what he's been able to do late in his career.
Does this surprise either one of you guys? Because I keep talking about, you know, postseason. Okay, so Gronk has played in 7 more postseason games, 22-15 over Kelce. Kelce has more catches in the postseason in 7 fewer games.
That's crazy.
Kelce has 106 catches in 15 games. Gronk had 98 in 22 games. Gronk has him in yards 1389 to 1291. But then touchdowns, Kelce has 12 in the postseason, and Gronk has 15. And so by the time he gets to 22 games, he'll have better numbers than Gronk in the postseason. Then the only difference is 3 championships to 1. And I'm not gonna say that Kelce can't catch him. So really, even like the postseason, that was different than I thought when I looked it up. You know, that I thought it was gonna be.
Yeah. Well, and I think now that you're saying that, kind of the thought that runs through my head is how many of those games were the Chiefs down like 24-0 in the playoffs, and immediately you got to throw to Kelce, get open, Kelce. You know, that's about the only thing you can do. But that kind of goes back to the Chiefs' offense too. But yeah, that's closer than I would have thought. But again, the perception's out there, and I think rightfully so that Gronk's had a great career, and whether it's over now or not, I guess we'll still debate that.
So let me ask you this one then: better tight end, Kelce or Tony Gonzalez? Now, this will get you kicked out of the studio.
I was going to say,
you better answer this one.
Yeah. Choose wisely, Indiana Jones.
I don't care what your analytics say over there, pal.
This guy with this. You can say what you want. I don't care. I'll just kick Nate out of the studio and pretend he's you.
Do I get the break to think about this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure you do.
Googling.
Jesse's like, why are you asking me all these questions that are going to get me attacked on Twitter? Leave me alone. Back after this on WHB. Whatever. But that sometimes that just great players and then elite players, Hall of Fame players, whatever, will take things that a normal person doesn't take as a slight or motivation and then turn that into something, right? And that's why they reach levels that others can't. And so you think about what Mahomes could use as motivation. The second half of the Bengals game and the championship game. Well, he fell apart. He did this. He did that. He's rattled. He'll never be the same. The AFC West now. Well, now here comes Russell Wilson, and now all these teams are better, and the Chiefs aren't going to win the division. Okay, write that down. Tyreek Hill leaving. Oh, this offense will never be the same without Tyreek Hill. You know, Tyreek Hill was the main reason why the Chiefs were successful offensively. Just one thing after another, and you're right. Don't you think, and he handles everything perfectly. He's great in front of the mic, but don't you think that's pissing him off? The Tyreek Hill stuff, all this, like, are you effing kidding me? What do I got to do to show people I'm one of, if not the, and I say the best quarterback in the NFL? But I think it's great if you're wanting the Chiefs to do well this year, because I do think him and Kelce behind closed doors, like, all right, okay, all right. They think that Kelce was open because Tyreek Hill was, you know, attracting all that coverage. They think Patrick Mahomes was good because Tyreek Hill was, I was just throwing the ball. Okay, well, let's find out, right? Great players use that to motivate in the offseason when they need to get that extra edge.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's a certain point where I think I wish I was a robot. I wish I could. I mean, Twitter's part of my job.
I do too sometimes. It's a weird dream that I have, but we're not going to get into that.
Let's not talk about that dream.
Right.
He wishes he was a robot umpire.
Yeah, I'd call everyone out.
But it's sort of like, you know, you get on there and you see things and you see criticism and you're like, I want to, you know, respond. I want to do something different. All that sort of stuff. And, you know, you flip your switch in your mind. You're thinking, you know, it'd be great if athletes could just kind of flush that away, not worry about it, perform their jobs or whatever. But we're all human, man. Like, they got to see that stuff. Everybody's got to see that stuff. And so, yeah, it sure seems like in the past when this sort of stuff has happened and Patrick Mahomes has been asked about it at a press conference setting, he'll shrug it off. No, that's no big deal, whatever. But then you see the little nod to it during the game, like, oh, who's the best player in the NFL, not the fourth best player? Oh, that would be Patrick Mahomes, you know, and I'm going to show you with all these touchdowns. And so, yeah, it's an interesting spot for the Chiefs to be in because they've just kind of – I don't – think they've instigated any of this, right?
They've instigated it by winning so much.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what happens. Yeah. Is like, you know, it's this is the arc of the celebrity in society. We love them right away, and they're the greatest thing ever, and then we can't wait for them to fall on their face or, you know, to tear them down and move on to the next thing. And it's four straight AFC championship mm-hmm. games at home. It's even if they've only won one Super Bowl, they've been the best team in the NFL over the balance of the last 4 years. And this is the part, you know, people started lining up to root against, you know,
just think about,
you know,
this.
That's just how it works.
Look at it from Buffalo, right?
Yeah.
If you're Buffalo, the last 2 years, you got beat in the championship game by the Chiefs. And then in the divisional round, you get beat in that game, and you could legitimately think, if it wasn't for the Chiefs, we'd have back-to-back Super Bowl championships. And how much would you hate the Chiefs for that? Mm-hmm. How much did we hate Tom Brady? Because you could think this, right?
Yep. Yeah.
You could think, if not for the Patriots and that damn offside call, the Chiefs could have won a championship there. And if not for Tom Brady and the Bucks, they could have won a championship there. Tom Brady has single-handedly perhaps prevented Patrick Mahomes from winning two championships. And the Chiefs maybe have prevented the Bills from winning two championships. Mm-hmm. And if you're Buffalo, it's not like the Chiefs have done anything dirty or they've been unlikable, but they've stopped you the last 2 years. You would despise Buffalo right now. The Chiefs right now if you're in Buffalo, right? Hate.
And if you're somebody from the AFC West, right. When was the last time somebody other than the Chiefs won the division?
How much did we hate John Elway? How much do we still despise John Elway if you were a Chiefs mm-hmm. fan in the mm-hmm. 80s and 90s?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And if you, when's the last time, 2015, that they've never beat Patrick Mahomes? Of course, you're going to sports hate him, you know?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it makes sense, but do you think that's going to change this year? Do you think the Chiefs are going to win the AFC West again, or do you think one of these teams is finally going to catch up and win the division?
You know, I'm fascinated. I really am, because I think they have more stacked up against them this year, the Chiefs do, than many other years. And I know people are going to roll their eyes and we talk the schedule to death, but it's a real thing. Like, when Denver gets to play three Patsies and the Chiefs have to play three division winners, and that's part of the schedule, it's a real thing. But, you know, how can you question Andy Reid's record against the AFC West at this point, right? I mean,
right.
That's what he does. He dominates that.
Isn't that the deciding factor? Look at the mismatches. Not to say these other guys are bad, but the lack of experience and success of these other head coaches versus Andy Reid.
I will say this, though. And I think you made a good point, Stephen, about, hey, all these teams are chasing the Chiefs, and especially the Bills. They're tired of losing to the Chiefs, and they haven't won their Super Bowl. So what they want to do is, you know, they get, you know, they beef up Von Miller, all this stuff. They do it so that's like, it's time to win now. Whereas the Chiefs, especially with the Tyreek Hill trade, I think we've talked about this, where we talked last week about, hey, Tyreek with the offense, probably a future Hall of Famer. They take him out. They bring other guys in. It might not look that great or as good in the first few weeks. It's going to take a little bit of a growing period. So when these other teams, you know, okay, the Broncos got Russell Wilson, and, you know, the Chargers are beefing up for what they're doing, and the Raiders get Devontae Adams. All these teams are mad and want to take down the Chiefs. The Chiefs took a step back and said, that's fine. Use up your bullets. Try to get good in the short term, because they're playing the long game here. And so maybe the reality situation is, could the Chiefs take a natural step back this year? I think so, because the other teams are really trying to beef up to beat them. The problem for those other teams is, in 2 or 3 years, where are they going to be when the Chiefs got all these young players in the draft after trading Tyreek Hill, and they sort of looked at the long game and said, okay, if everyone wants to use up their bullets in 2022, the Chiefs are still going to be in the game then, but then you look 2025, 2026, 2027, then what's going to happen? Is there going to be anybody good in the AFC then? And then potentially, can you take over? So I guess my point here is that we can talk about, there are realities here. There are realities for Andy Reid that this is going to be tougher for him to win these games than it was a season ago, 2 seasons ago, all that. But yeah, there's still the history to say they're pretty good at overcoming this, and they're pretty good at making what's good from the pieces that they have. So we shall see the Chiefs. And, I'm fascinated to see what happens because this could go a lot of different directions.
Right, but, what if the Chargers and Raiders and Broncos, what if they don't? They put it all in to win these next couple of years, and then they don't, and then they got to pay the bill.
Let me give you another one. See, what if the Chiefs sneak into the playoffs as the sixth seed?
And you want to play them?
And then make the AFC Championship game. All these other teams are pushing all their chips, going all in and saying 2022 is the year. And the Chiefs are going, we'll just kind of see what happens this year, but push all our chips into the future, too, and they'll keep that window open. And then the Chiefs still, things happen in the playoffs. You can win when you're an underdog. We saw the Bengals do it last year. So that's sort of the long game.
Especially if you got Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback.
Yeah, that's the long game the Chiefs are playing and the short-term game these other teams are playing, which I think if you're Brett Veach, you're loving it because you're like, if you just sneak into the playoffs and you're the Chiefs this year, it's going to be a win and they've got a chance to make a run.
Like, how terrified would you be? Because, in that scenario, and then say they didn't win the division, they snuck in as a wild card or whatever, and you had a young defense that got better in the second half and they were hitting their stride in the final month of the season. Like, how terrifying would it be? Hey, we got a home playoff game. Who are you playing? The Chiefs. What? Hello? What's that? What quarterback? Mahomes? Okay, then. We're screwed. Right? It's like, I can totally see that happening.
You know what I'm saying? That's our scenario. And the receivers, too. Gelling with Mahomes at that time, they'll have a full year with him. So, yeah.
Marco wants to talk now. You really struck a chord.
Because that's the conversation that I feel like haven't had this year, too, when the first half of the season where it's like, the Chiefs are out of it. They're not good. They're not going to be able to win this division. They're 1-3. They just lost on the road in Baltimore. They lost to the Chargers at home. It's like, all right, you just got to make the playoffs.
Butts kicked
Kansas
by
City.
Buffalo. Yeah.
And people talk about that because they want that. How many times did we all want to shovel dirt on the Patriots? Don't you remember that Monday Night Football loss?
Oh, yeah.
The night before the wild card game.
Tom Brady's done. Time to bench him.
Yeah, but maybe Garoppolo deserves a start this week. Yeah, Bills, Patriots are done. And, they're not done. Damn it. And so, great. Shovel dirt on the Chiefs. I can't wait. We'll take a break. Back into this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol and Sports Radio 810 WHB. If you'd like to be part of the 2022 Listener Golf Tournament for Sports Radio 810, I encourage you to go to 810WHB.com. Click to register. Only $108.10 per player. Ticket includes golf, cart, welcome bag, drink tickets, breakfast, and lunch. Every player will receive a 15-minute conversation with Nate Bucati, and so you can come out and enjoy that. And so come out and join us, 810WHB.com. You can upgrade to a 30-minute conversation with Nate if you mention the word soccer. And so come on out and join us, 810WHB.com. And you can join the Listener Golf Tournament coming up July 25th at the Fred Arbanis Golf Course. Hey, Jesse, we only have a few minutes left, but I saw you retweet an interesting story about Russell Wilson's personal quarterback coach, who is a former Kansas quarterback under the tutelage of Charlie Weiss. So Nate, do you know about this?
No, is this Dane Crist or Heaps?
Jake Heaps, you got it.
You got 3 minutes, but explain what he's the man that's in charge. He's going to Denver and he's going to try to make sure Russell Wilson overtakes Patrick Mahomes. What's going on here?
Yeah, it's fascinating. Well, again, I mean, he's a great guy to cover back in the Kansas days in football and was real technical, detailed. He used to be a top-ranked quarterback, but originally from the Seattle area, made his way back there and was obviously linked up with Russell Wilson. He was on a radio show, and he quit that to move to Colorado to be Russell Wilson's private quarterback coach. So it's sort of fascinating. Again, he's somebody that's younger than us, and it's not something that I'm just being honest here. KU football doesn't normally have these sorts of guys that are considered quarterback gurus, and he didn't have the greatest of careers. Obviously, he transferred to Kansas and then away from Kansas after a year, but it was just fascinating. It's kind of the two worlds coming together, and obviously the Russell Wilson thing, now the AFC West connection. It's a crazy story to think about that and to think about a guy that is that young to be able to be in charge of Russell Wilson and how he does passing-wise.
How would you rank the AFC West quarterbacks going into this season?
Okay. Mahomes, Herbert. That's right.
Okay.
It's my quarterback.
Russell, Wilson, and then I guess somebody's got to put Carr last, right? Because his brother's putting all the Raiders
right
first.
I'd listen to someone say, well, at this point, I think Carr's better than Wilson. I mean, but you think Wilson, you'd rather have Wilson than Carr?
Yeah, it's one of those scenarios. I mean, I want to see Wilson outside of Seattle, too. Just right. to see what he can get with a new OC and a different set of weapons and see how he goes from here.
Anything that you're working on that you want to promote for the Kansas City Star we can look for?
It's just the same old, same old. We got a lot of Royals duty this week, so covering them on Friday, Sunday, Tuesday. So you will see the byline there out at the K.
The return of Zach Greinke on Friday. So,
I mean, they've been playing better lately. So we'll see if the offense keep going. And, heck, Bobby Witt, that'll be a story. If he continues hitting like this at the age he is, then that's really exciting for the Royals.
Well, that should be okay because Ohtani will not be pitching this weekend. So they should be good to go. That is our good friend Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star who joins us every week. Right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Border Patrol has been brought to you by Walker Medical Linen Services, setting the standard in healthcare laundry services for hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in Kansas City. Walker Medical Linen delivers laundry you can depend on. HLAC certified to the highest standards. It's Walker Medical Linen Services, online at walkermls.com.
Bye-bye.